Welcome to ET First Contact Radio. This is Maarten Horst speaking, your host. I have a special guest, Patricia Corey. I've been ill, let's say, for 6 months, and I'm back here. And we have a little problem with my introduction music, and here it's coming. It's just loading, and I made some editing work on it with a computer program, and it should lift you up all, so bear with me. Here we go.
Ready for the show? I'm ready to start.
10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower clear.
Roger.
Radio. This is your host speaking, Maarten Horst, and I have my first guest in within half a year, and it is my dear and beloved friend Patricia Corey. How are you, Patricia?
How are you, Maarten? I'm so glad you're back, and I'm honored to be your first guest back on your show.
And I'm honored to have you as my first guest. Well, the topics I want to discuss with you today are the spirals in the sky that seem to increase during the year 2012, and it started kind of in 2009 in Norway. And another topic I would like to discuss with you is the whales and the dolphins. How about it?
Okay, you tell me where you want to go and I'll follow.
Yeah, well, of course, the crop circles is a very interesting topic, and I know you take people with you during sacred journeys in England for the crop circles, and you also take people to Egypt and Peru. So it may be interesting for people to know that you do these wonderful journeys. So maybe we can start by that you tell the listeners what you have in mind for this year, what you plan for.
First of all, I'd love to remind people that you and I met at the crop circles, which was prophetic that we would be talking about that today. So
yeah.
We've sat in a couple of crop circles together.
Indeed.
Indeed, yes. The last one that you and I sat in was, we talked about it feeling like there was a dome over us. And I experienced the same feeling in Egypt in November when I brought a group of people, of spiritual seekers, to Egypt. We had a most remarkable time, and we had the same feeling. We were in the temple of Hatshepsut in the open night air. I brought the group in a private session in the middle of the night, which is something I like to do. And again, we felt like we were covered in a dome. And in that event, I told the people to lie down and look up, and I called out and said, please come. You always come to me, but please come and show yourselves to these people. And we had immediate response from two UFO craft, 50 people witnessing this event. Wow. So as soon as I said this, please come, my message was, please come. You're always there for me because, you know, I'm a galactic kind of gal. But please come for them. Show yourselves. And bam, a light appeared in the sky and it started to move across the horizon. And somebody said, oh, my God, maybe it's a satellite. And it took a 90-degree turn at the point that person said that. It did 90-degree turn. And then everybody said, like, whoa, and it made another 90-degree turn and continued across the horizon until it started doing somersaults and flips, and then it disappeared. And, of course, everybody was speechless and started rejoicing. And I said, it's not finished yet. Boom! Another light appeared across the other side of the horizon and started doing the same thing. It came back across. It did jagged activity. There was no question that it was showing us that it was responding to the call and interacting with us intelligently. So I think that's an important way to start out our talk. Not just that we are only observers of these phenomena, but I do believe that we've entered into a period where we're interacting with these phenomena.
That's beautiful. And I remember that we were eating a soup after visiting a crop circle. I think it was in 2010 in England. And
that's,
we discussed,
right,
the light phenomena in the sky, because you said those patterns that are in the crop fields, those geometric patterns, we'll see in the skies more and more in the future. And that's 2 years ago. We are now in 2012, and I have the feeling that they are appearing more and more. And I have seen some things myself, and indeed, I feel they are interacting with me, because I was looking up at the light in the sky, and I was tuning into it, and it moved to another direction.
Yeah. If you recall that conversation, one of the things I said was, I think that we're going to see the crop circle phenomenon decline, and it's going to shift now to light circles. And in fact, this year's crop circles are very unimpressive. There are few and far between, and there's nothing like the incredible formations that I've been going to the crops for, 1996. I'm a veteran croppie, and I've sat in some of the remarkable formations, but I don't see them this year. Of course, the year is just starting, so the season is starting, shall we say. But
yes,
my information is that we're going to see more and more formations in the sky, as you said. And I think it's time for people to really start getting out of the house and getting away from the TV set and spending some time in the night looking up at the stars, because it's not hard to see craft moving about. They're everywhere.
No, it isn't. It's beautiful. And I have seen some things couple of nights ago. I was outside at 11 or 12 at night, and I saw a beautiful light moving, and I was sure it was not a satellite, and I felt my heart was connected to it, and it moved in the other direction.
I'm sorry, Martin, your voice is cutting out. Martin, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Your voice was cutting out.
Oh, what about now?
Okay, better. So I would like to continue what I was saying, which is when you put your energy into actually communicating and saying, look, I am here. I am interacting with you. Please show me yourself, like I did that night. Very often, you're going to experience communication. And I think this is very exciting. And I'm not a person who is really that interested in phenomenon for phenomenon's sake. But when we start seeing this kind of activity interacting with human consciousness, this gets me excited.
Yeah, me too. It's beautiful. And the light phenomenon in the sky, is it true that there... Patricia?
Yes,
that those light phenomena in the sky, is it true that they will become more like geometric patterns, like crop circles or spirals that are going to appear in the sky?
Well, according to my source, which you know is the Syrian High Council, the crop circles were forebearers of the procedure of the process of us becoming more aware of what's going on in the sky, as our ancestors did. I mean, look at all of the ancient relics and all the ancient sacred sites. All of them are about star worshiping or sun worshiping, right?
Indeed, the Incas, the Mayans, the Egyptians, the old Chinese, the Japanese.
Stonehenge and all of these stone circles across the world are all aligned with stars or solar alignments or whatever. So we have stopped looking. I mean, we're beginning to, as a civilization, we're beginning to we're restarting to become more aware of it. But in the last era, we've become homebound, locked down, comfort zone citizens for a large part of society. I'm not talking, of course, about the indigenous people. So I think that the message that I'm receiving is we gave you crop circles to make you aware of the language of the universe and how any civilization can communicate with another. And now we're telling you that that's going to start to slow down. And now we're preparing you to start looking up. And like you said, these formations are starting to happen. You can see them, all of these UFO, they're unidentified flying objects. So I can say UFOs, these clusters over cities. It's happening more and more. And very often they form geometric designs. One of them is the triangulation. We see it all over the place, and I'm not just talking about the triangle craft, but actually triangulating stars that form in patterns that look like triangles over and over again.
Mm-hmm. And they move as a triangle. Yeah.
Yes.
Patricia. Yeah, I have read most of your work, especially the Syrian Revelation books, which is The Cosmos of the Soul, Atlantis Rising, and No More Chickens and No More Lies. It's a kind of a trilogy.
Yes.
And in the first book, I found the best myself, The Cosmos of the Soul. It's really interesting how you describe, or how the Syrian Council describes, the ascension process. And what I remember reading was, because I don't know exactly when ascension will happen, but... what was interesting to read is that when you ascend, you better not have a grave with you. Could you be more specific on that?
Well, that's not quite what they said. They talk about the process of returning in and out of the tunnel of reality, of three-dimensional reality, is often described as a sort of tunnel of density. And that as light beings, we come into this tunnel, we go through the process of living a biological life, and then we return to light. Or after that process of returning to light, we immediately want to come back into a life, or we spend time in the halls of learning. There are many aspects to that state of being outside of physical reality. The council said that in this passing out of biological life or physical life as we know it, there is a zone called the gray zone, and this gray zone is where it's not unlike the River Styx in Egyptian mythology, or even purgatory in the classic Judeo-Christian mythology. But they say it's an actual place. It's a gray zone, which is completely just stuck energy. It's no light enters. It's just like in a fog. And there are a lot of lost souls in this density. And so they say, yeah.
Yeah, no, well, I was interested in knowing more specifically what it meant. So it's good that you explained it. Go ahead.
And they were just saying that in this zone, there are souls that try to hook on, especially when people are coming into the physical reality, that try to leap on and attach themselves to souls entering the physical reality to release themselves from this gray zone. And it's very interesting. They actually call them Klingons. And you have to laugh because, you know, the bad guys in the old Star Trek series were called Klingons. But the series referred to them as these souls that are trying to cling on to get themselves out of this dimension. And it's not a dimension. It's a zone, the gray zone. But they say that it's really the exception that you get stuck with any of these attachments, and that you just need to be aware when your soul is moving in and out of any density that this exists. And it's it's a very good reason why you want to remember to be in your highest vibration at all times. Because at the moment of your passing, you want to be so full of love and so full of light that nothing can touch you, and you move right into.
Can you give the listeners some clues how they can maintain their vibration high as possible?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, in the end, the most important thing, we've got a lot of trite terminologies like love and light and beautiful thoughts that are used so much, however, that sometimes they lose their value. So what I want to remind people is the most important, I believe, of course, it's my belief that the most important thing to work on in your life right now is fearlessness and egoless service. These two aspects of being here right now are what really make the process of life so incredible. When you face your dragons, no matter how frightening, you face them head on. Inevitably, they shrink down into a little ball, and you say, wow, why did I waste so much of my life being afraid of that? And the ego is a deterrent to ever reaching any sort of illumination, because it steps in the way, and it takes, instead of being able to turn your light out to others and be in service, the ego sucks it all up and eventually brings you into disharmony. So those are the two aspects, I think. At least that's what I work on in my life. And I recommend that people really start to understand what that means. Besides being tools for ascension, it is a tool for being present in your life right now and celebrating the life now. Because great, ascension or no ascension, this is what you've got to work with now. Make it perfect. And by perfect, I mean make it a celebration and joy.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's what I like about you, that you are so joyful, Patricia.
Yes, I am. It's not like I'm in La La Land. I certainly have been bringing forward all of the difficult information.
Yes, well, the use of humor that you now and then to use a joke make people comfortable, and it's very good that you do that.
Well, that's very nice to hear. Thank you. That's my job. Make people not too comfortable. I'm trying to get people to get out of the comfort zone, but to be more hopeful, because people are, let's face it, I mean, we've got this December 21st Damocles hanging over our heads, and a lot of people are in a lot of fear, not to mention what's going on globally. And We have to remember that we, no matter what happens, we're just passing through here. We're immortal beings. So no matter how bad it's going to get or how good it's going to get, this is a passing stage. It is not your only reality. And I think that's very, very important to remember.
Yes. May I ask you another question, Patricia?
Of course.
Yeah, it's a question about the latest information that the Syrian council is giving you, because the most important that you received are, of course, the Cosmos of the Soul, Atlantis Rising, and No More Sins and No More Lies. And then you wrote Where Pharaohs Dwell, and now your latest book is Before We Leave You, The Message from the Dolphins.
But yes.
Is there any information you have been receiving from the Syrians lately?
Okay, the book, Before We Leave You, is channeled from two entities, the Ascended Whales and Dolphins who sit on the Syrian High Council, mm-hmm. and the Whales and Dolphins of the Earth who communicate to me through that channel. Okay? Mm-hmm. So they are, in essence, sitting on the Syrian High Council. So the message that they bring through, and bear in mind that book came out last May, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember
it. Yeah, I think it was May, and it was channeled, a year and a half or 2 years ahead of that. So their message was that to make people understand, to make humankind recognize that the whales and dolphins are part of a musical symphony that holds the pattern, the vibrational patterns and signature of the physical universe together. They exist on many levels of reality, not just as physical beings. And their role, their job, is to hold this music, and particularly on Earth, which is an 80% musical water celestial being, they are holding the musical patterns and frequencies of the world's oceans together. Without them doing that, the planet will go into complete flood, another biblical flood, because mm-hmm. their job is to hold that balance. So the book is an appeal to humankind to understand. It's an appeal on one side to ask humanity to please help them. That's why the title, Before We Leave You. They are telling us that they may have to go because of the disharmonies on the planet. But before they make that decision, they're calling out to humankind to start to affect the changes that will bring Earth back to balance. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, they celebrate the human dolphin whale connection, and they bring forward a lot of information about their role as galactic musicians in this unit. It's very, very beautiful and very poetic channeled information. So you can look at the dolphins and whales truly as extra dimensional beings, because they are on many dimensions, not just physical. And they're also a form of ETs, because they exist on many planets. Many planets. And what they say is that we have the capacity, what you don't understand yet, is that we have the capacity to communicate with each other on all dimensions and on many planets.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, it is.
So, what can you tell us about this musical harmony that they create in our oceans? I mean, they are in contact with the mother planet, Mother Earth, Gaia, and somehow those get the oceans and keep them in balance, as you said. And how is it exactly working with the music they are making, with the sounds they are producing?
They produce, well, I am not capable now to talk to you about the Hertz frequencies and everything like that, because I'm not a very good scientist. However, that information is presented in the book by someone who gave me some incredible mandalas that were designed around the frequencies of the dolphins and the whales. And they're beautiful. It's, just for those alone, people really should get the book. But what I can say is that there is this whole planet is encircled with musical frequencies from the whale. The whole oceana of the Earth has had a relay. In other words, one whale can reach 30 miles and the music reaches there, and then the whale that receives that information then sends it forward, etc. And they have been sending frequencies that hold the waves, hold the whole ocean currents in a certain vibratory balance that keeps works with the moon, the tides. It's not just all haphazard here, some people like to think. There's a design here, the creation design of this planet is aligned with the creation design of all the others. So
it's beautiful to see things connected and intertwined with each other and not separate, because classical science told us that everything is separate and that all molecules and all atoms are separate and that they are separate. But we are not separate. We all connect with each other and create geometric patterns as planets. I knew that, and it's so beautiful that you are now affirming this. And I think many people will be happy to hear this. And I want to recommend anybody who's listening to buy Patricia Corey's latest book, Before We Leave You. And it's really recommendable.
Thank you, Martin. I would like to say that since that book came out, thousands upon thousands of dolphins are dying. It's like there's been a huge increase in the amount of dolphins who are dying. In fact, we know that in Peru, there has been 1,200 dead dolphins in the last few months alone.
Yes, I have to cry. I started crying when I heard that in the news, that all those dolphins were washing ashore and dying on the coast of Peru.
Yes, in fact, tomorrow, Saturday, is my radio show on BBS, and I've got Hardy Jones on, who is the founder of Blue Voice, and he's been out to Peru, and he's got the scoop on what's really happening there, so he's going to be talking about it. But, of course, part of my big message in this book is about the sonar that the Navy and other drilling companies or whatever are using, these intense sonar frequencies for, in the case of the Navy, for war games and looking for whatever they're looking for. And then there are oil companies that are using sonar to comb the ocean floor, and they're looking for oil. And these sounds are, first of all, destroying the music that we've been talking about, but also they are blowing the brains out of these mammals, because they have extraordinarily sensitive oral cavities, and these blasts are so bad that their brains are exploding, and they're finding dolphins and whales that are washing up, the ones that are washing up rather than sinking to the ocean bottom, with their brains blown out. This is clearly the most distressing information. So they're calling out to us that this has got to stop. And my question,
as much as I can. Yes?
I'm just saying, it's my mission, as much as I could possibly do while I'm still on this planet, to awaken people to this situation and to unite people in fighting for the oceans of this world.
Yeah, I think we need to have some help from outside, though. I have been receiving messages about people who are saying that the Illuminati or the Dark Cabal, who are in fact the rulers of this world, will by the galactic forces. What's your insight about it? How will that be stopped?
I'm sorry, but your voice went out. I didn't hear your whole question.
Okay, my question is, I've been hearing rumors from different sources that the people who are ruling this world, who are above the oil companies, let's call them the Illuminati or the powers that were, or the Dark Cabal, and that there will be an intervention by the Galactics, the Syrians, the Pleiadians, and they will arrest them and they detain them. What's your insight about that?
You know, there's this whole movement of people that have got the ETs are going to save us mindset. And I don't mean to be a poo-poo anybody else's beliefs. But my personal understanding is that if we don't fix it, if we don't heal this planet, and we don't address the karma that we've created, because we're creating it, even if we're passive users of oil, we're still using the oil. We're still creating a market for these people to do what they do. So we are not without our karmic responsibility here. But it's easy to blame the bad guys. The Illuminati are the bad guys. And the good ETs are going to come and fix it. And that's all a very neat little package that releases us from any sense of obligation or responsibility of what we need to do on this planet. And I, for one, do not believe that anyone has to come and save us. We are the saviors. We are the ones who have got to turn this around.
But how are we going to do that? I mean, how can we fight these big oil companies? Because they're so huge, so massive, and they are protected by the military. And if you also stop buying oil, we cannot transport ourselves. So what is the alternative?
Well, that's a good question, Martin. For starters, there's no question that the old system is coming down. As much as the powers that be are fighting it, everything is crumbling, and they're well aware of it. So it's interesting if you really look at things with a bigger perspective, how the universe works. If the financial structure of this planet goes down, a lot of people won't be able to afford oil anyway. It's going to be a whole new way of looking at how you're going to survive with ecological alternatives. And this is why we haven't got solar, proliferation of solar heating, et cetera. The oil companies, we understand, don't want us to be using free energy, but I believe that is coming. And when it comes, when it can no longer be stopped, there will be no market for oil.
Mm-hmm.
So we have got to be empowered. It's hard to do this when you think that the world is at the edge of destruction, and it's nice to have all this positive thinking, but we are at the breaking point. And needless to say, most of us are feeling that way. I personally believe that the system is coming down, and instead of fear, I celebrate it. And I know there's going to be a lot of changes that we're going to have to cope with, and one of these is returning to the Earth. Now, whether or not that's going to be the Earth in the fourth dimension or not, I leaves to be decided. But I trust that we're going to turn it around. I do.
Yeah.
Look, for example, in India, in Hungary, Bulgaria, many countries now are condemning Monsanto, and they're refusing Monsanto crops in their countries, right? So the rebellion and the revolution is happening. This is what I think.
Yes. Yeah, I think we should all unite together as human race and start to think for ourselves and be independent of all those big companies. But anyway, the collapse of the system is inevitable.
That's right. Now, the question is, will 7 billion human beings start to take some more responsibility for the environment? For example, nobody should be eating tuna, aside from the fact that tuna is now becoming radiated. In California, the tuna is radiated from Fukushima. They are a species in extinction, and they are food for the larger sea creatures, right? So, yeah, I mean, everything is interdependent. So humans have this top of the food chain attitude that is, well, whatever, and going about their normal behaviors. And fortunately, many people are starting to wake up, waking up to alternatives, waking up to vegetarianism, waking up to having a responsibility for what evolves on this planet. Okay, now, there are still the people that say, well, the good ETs are coming down in ships and they're going to take away all the good spiritual people, and I just don't buy that. I think that is a fantasy that is nothing more than a modern day take on the Messiah or the return of Jesus. Somebody good is going to come and save.
I was just asking the question because those rumors are circulating around the internet, and I was just curious how your thoughts about this are about this.
My thoughts are this. I do believe that disclosure is imminent. It's in my books, and I have been speaking about it a lot. The disclosure is not, in my opinion, that a bunch of motherships are going to come and save us, but that responsible, determined, and slightly authoritarian ETs who are neither good or bad, they're simply regulators of universal law, are going to make themselves known to the human race very, very soon and bring us into alignment with galactic regulations so that the weapons have to go, the self-destruction has to stop, the proliferation of arms in space, needless to say, is what's bringing them in. Because the series say, as long as you're bent on destroying yourselves, we can't intervene. But at the moment that you become dangerous to the outside of your parameters, then we can. And so I think the intervention is going to be one of relative diplomacy. That is, all right, you crazy little kids, the game's going to change. Now, here you are. Here's the reality. You are members of a galactic reality, and we have laws, and we have civilization, and we need to bring you up into alignment with living in harmony with your neighbors and yourselves. I think that's coming.
I can't wait for it to happen.
I can't wait for it either. And I it's a form of helping, but I don't want to be saved. I want us to save this planet, and I welcome the wisdom of beings that are beyond here, that have gotten past stage zero civilization where we self-destruct everything beneath us.
Yes, indeed. Well, I think those beings that are coming, they're not going to take away the responsibility from us. We still need to heal the planet and to undo all the damage that we did to her.
Exactly. I think that we're going to be asked or guided to what it means to be in this community of evolved planets and evolved civilizations and what we're going to have to do to make the mark. It's a little bit like what the countries in the EEC have to do to keep their EEC status, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. What's your insight? What's your insight about the political situation in the world, the economic situation? How long will the system will be able to maintain itself, or how long will it take until it completely collapses?
I don't usually talk exact timing because we're constantly changing the tape with our conscious interaction in reality. But it's a deliberate plan, as we all know. And Greece was the testing ground. People are standing in line begging for food in Greece, okay?
Yeah.
And the omnipotent masters are orchestrating it so that people are killing themselves out of despair. So it's first Greece, there's Spain, there's Portugal. It's all designed to make us into slaves. I mean, you know, the austerity concept is you pay, so supposedly the taxes are being, all we do is pay taxes. All they do is make money. And there's no money left to do anything but pay them. Austerity means they have to squeeze the belt and make the taxes higher so that they can meet the requirements to stay in the EC. It's all structured to pay off the rich. So, but I don't think there's going to be a total collapse. I don't see that. I don't think that that's realistic. They can't allow a total collapse because they've got to keep their slaves working. A certain percentage of slaves have to work to take care of the powers that be. And I think that they underestimate the rebellion of the human race and the resistance to tyranny. So I think that it's going to get pretty tough. But I don't believe the total collapse scenario. Let's see who's right.
Okay, well, I'm just curious. How do you see those protests, this rebellion attitude of the people? Because I have been involved in the Occupy movement in The Hague. And we were at the beginning with a couple of hundred of people, and then it declined to a fistful of rebellions, including myself, sleeping in tents and protecting us against the severe weather in the winter. But I hope that, and how do you see the people going to claim back the earth? How do you see this rebellion?
Well, Martin, I'm not so sure about the Occupy movement. There's something about it that doesn't convince me, let's say, of who's really behind it. But what I am seeing is hundreds of thousands of people across the world, students particularly, but not limited to students, in Mexico City, in London, Egypt. There's definitely a rising of the human spirit, and not just the 100 people that are in the Occupy camps. I'm talking about hundreds of thousands, 500,000 people in, where was it? In Montreal. Mexico City. The streets are just, you know, and they're rebelling against the law that you can't protest. So there's 5.5 million people protesting, and that is what the power fears the most, the power of our union, and it cannot be stopped. The more the Syrians, one of the quotes from the Syrians that I think is the most powerful, and I use a lot of the time, is the more they squeeze you, the freer you will become. So here it is. They're squeezing us. We're not allowed to do this. We're not allowed to do that. We're not allowed to protest. All of their tracking devices, it doesn't matter. They cannot contain human rebellion.
So there will be more and more people who will stand up against the system.
Well, sure. More and more. Look at what's happening. I mean, Mexico City is amazing. There's going to be a huge situation in London, for sure, with this ridiculous, poor excuse for the Olympic Games. And Montreal is amazing. I mean, it's 500,000 people out there. That is a lot of people.
500,000. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I think that they underestimate how clever they overestimate how clever they are and all of their control mechanisms, and they underestimate the intrinsic essence, the power of the human spirit. It's taking time for people to get off of their assets. And wake up to the reality of what's going on. But people are waking up. And this is what we have to remember.
That's beautiful. But I think in countries like Holland, we are still too comfortable because we have one of the best social systems. We are still too comfortable. And I think people in Holland should wake up and protest more.
Well, but you see, that's the divine order of things. That triggers people to move is discomfort, right? I mean, look at the Greeks. They started rebelling when their rights were starting to be taken away. And the truth is, as long as we're in our comfort zone, we look at the other people and say, wow, that's poor people. That's really terrible. What's on TV tonight? And so if it requires to change this planet requires that things are taken away from us, well, then okay. Let's get a move on. Let's go through that so that we are ready to get off of the couch and start fighting for what we believe in. And I shouldn't use the word fighting. I know I'll get protest from that. And what I mean is standing for what we believe in.
Yeah, stand up for your rights.
Stand. Yes. Yeah. Standing for your rights and for the rights of others too, because we're very insular. And now is the time stand up as a community of beings rather than looking out for ourselves.
Oh, yeah, we're all connected, of course. Patricia, I want to ask you something else about the dolphins. Is it true that because they're all passing away, which is so sad, and I would recommend the listeners to listen on Saturday to Patricia's show. You will interview, what's the name of the gentleman?
His name is Hardy Jones, and he's the founder of bluevoice.org. And he does a lot of very important work. He's actually the first person who discovered the cove in Taiji, Japan. And he has been trying to get the Japanese to stop killing dolphins because they eat the dolphin meat. And he's been trying to educate them about the toxicity of eating the dolphin meat. So he's been using this kind of approach to try to help them change their cultural habit of killing dolphins for food.
Is that the guy who was detained in Japan?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, so everybody should listen Saturday. What time, Patricia?
It's 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Okay.
And if PBS Station 1.
And if you want to know your local times anywhere around the globe, you can use the www.timezoneconverter.com to see what time you have. If you type in 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, you will get local time wherever you are.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about the sonar because let's say that I definitely don't hold back when I talk about these things. And I've had Rosalind Peterson on my show, who is protesting against the Navy 5-year programs to declare war on the oceans, and they're using super sonar and things like that. And Harvey comes back from Peru saying it's the sonar, because people are asking what's killing all these dolphins, right? Is it the water? Is it toxicity? And he's going to be talking about the sonar, which is, of course, a big part of my book, Before We Leave You, The Effect of Sonar on These Beings. So yes. I hope if people are interested in this and concerned about the whales and dolphins, they should definitely tune into that show.
Yeah, they definitely should, and they definitely recommend the book Before We Leave You, Patricia Corey. Because before we leave you, it's because they are leaving now. I mean, what does that mean for the time we are in right now, Patricia?
Well, of course, again, Before We Leave You was the title, and it was 2 years ago. And since then, how many thousands of whales and dolphins have died? So, but their message is, before we leave you, the message of the book, even though it's difficult, some moments are very sad in this book, their message is, there's still time. We don't have to go. We need a certain number of cetaceans on the planet so that when the planet moves into the next dimension, we will be working on all other dimensions as well, but we need a number of cetaceans holding the energy of the planet so that it makes its journey through the ascension cord, which is described in the Syrian Revelations.
Yeah, the Syrian Revelations trilogy is very fascinating. And I must tell you, before I met you, I was reading your book in England in 2009 in Wiltshire. And every day after I was visiting the crop circles, I would go to my tent in Wilcott in the golden sun and sit in front of my tent and read The Cosmos of the Soul. And it really inspired me to do more research about the crop circles and about the whole phenomenon of ascension.
Good. That was a very powerful experience for me to channel that book.
Yeah. Maybe to give you a little introduction to the listeners, you was in England in 1996, and you was at the Julia Formation, 2 hours in a crop circle. And before that, you dreamed about this crop circle. You saw it in your dream. You saw yourself floating above it.
Yes.
And then 2 weeks later, the Syrian High Council contacted you.
Yes.
And do you want to share some insight about this experience to the listeners? Because I think it's extraordinary.
Yes, well, I love when psychic experiences are shared by other people, so you've got validation in the experience. And what happened was I was in England doing a color therapy course at a college there, and my dream was that I was flying over Stonehenge, yes, and I saw this big spiral on the right of it, and I didn't know what it was, and a voice told me, in the dream, of course, pay attention. This is an interdimensional contact point, and it's going to be very important for you. And I woke up, and it was 4 in the morning. I was in this dorm kind of situation with other people. So that morning I shared this with people and I drew an image of it. I said, it was so real for me. It looked like this. And then I went to Glastonbury on a field trip for the weekend, and there was this image, the exact same image, on the wall as a photograph. And I said, what in the world is that? And the woman explained to me that it was the very, very important crop circle that had come down. And until then, I really wasn't very knowledgeable about crop circles. I thought they were just burn marks from UFOs or something. So it was a very, I mean, it was precise. It was so precise that when we brought back the picture of it to the college and we looked at my drawing, it was exactly the same. You could overlay one on the other.
That's a beautiful, fascinating story. Continue.
Yeah. So what happened was one of the professors heard the story and he said, Patricia, the real reason you're here is to go to that crop circle, not to be here in the course. I'll take you. And he did. And when I got there, I lost consciousness immediately. I just fell down in the middle of a circle and lost consciousness for 2 hours. And in those 2 hours, I think I got some kind of an alignment or tune-up, because when I returned to consciousness, it took me forever to get back in my body. But shortly thereafter, I started to receive these messages. And I want to say that I've been psychic all my life. I've never wanted to act as or serve as a medium before, but I couldn't stop it. It just kept coming. So I honored it, and the rest is history.
I remember you telling me or reading your book, I don't know exactly what it was, but that you as a child saw the Syrians and they appeared to you as little blue toys. Yeah.
I used to call them the little blue people.
I think that's so sweet.
I think that they were working with me all of my life, and that this appearance as little blue beings was so that a child wouldn't be afraid, and that they were almost toy-like and like Tinkerbell, they kind of being. And I've talked to other people in this journey who have also seen these little blue beings. I think they're little emissaries. Yeah.
So there are more people with similar experiences then.
Yes, there are so many people that are connecting to the Syrian vibration now. It's really remarkable. It's a very powerful force.
I feel connected to the Syrian vibration. And I'm attracted to people like you and people that I meet in the crop circle area in England, Wiltshire. And I need to go back every year since the first time I came there to reconnect with the people there and with the energy from the whole area.
Yeah, it's a sacred space, and the energy, the veils are very low, and it's just no matter what happens, it's always very magical. I'll be there, by the way. My group is sold out, so we're going to be there from the 16th to the 26th, and I'll bring you back firsthand information of what's going on there.
Cool. So you mean the 16th until the 26th of July?
Yeah, and I do still have space if anyone's interested. I'm teaching my DNA Level 1 and 2 Activation Workshop on the 21st and 22nd in Glastonbury. If anybody's interested, they can get in touch with me.
And they can reach you on www.syrianrevelations.net.
Yes.
And your email address is pets.corey@tiscali.it, or did it change?
No, it's better to use info@syrianrevelations.net.
Okay. So we are almost at the end of the hour. Patricia, I was very delighted to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Could you maybe, anything that you find important to share with the people about the dolphins or about disclosure or about anything we can do to make this world better? Can you give us any insight in the last couple of minutes for the show?
You know, I've just founded an organization entitled SaveEarthsOceans.org, and I am starting to put together a platform that's going to involve cleaning the beaches, protesting and fighting to release dolphins in captivity, all kinds of activity, and I'm going to need a global outcry to help me. I want to unite as many forces as possible, because a lot of people that are working for the dolphins and whales are independent of each other. We need to join forces. So on a pragmatic level, I hope people will rally for that. And on a personal level, be a lighthouse every day. Shine your light out. Make people understand that no matter what lies ahead, they have this moment right now. Make it special. What are you going to do with this day? Make it remember, you wake up in the morning with a clean slate, and every day you have a possibility to create a new reality. So make it matter. That's my message.
Beautiful words. And I feel very happy to have you on the show and to share with the listeners the latest insights that Patricia has. And I will say goodbye to you all, and I will speak to you in 2 weeks, where I will have a new guest on BBS Radio. So my show is back on air. I'm back in business, and I'll have a very special guest every other 2 weeks on BBS Radio. So thank you, Patricia.
Thank you, and welcome back, Martin.
And I wish you all a very pleasant rest of your day or night or wherever you are in the world. And to listen to Patricia's show on Saturday at 11 a.m. And stay tuned, and everybody stay in the light and keep the vibration high and make the best of every day, as Patricia shared with us. Thank you, everybody.